Joan, welcome back to the show. When we ended the show last week, you were unknowing of a big event.
Exactly. Practically, as we were recording, the Pope was announcing, it was the Epiphany, and the Pope was announcing 22 new cardinals, 18 of whom are under the age of 80. Therefore, they go into the College of Cardinals as electors. So a very exciting day, and we won't take time, obviously. February 18th, exactly. That's the day that they will become cardinals. And along with that news this week, actually on Tuesday, the Vatican did announce changes, modifications, if you will, in the consistory ceremony. And whereas in past years, as we know from having covered it, a consistory to create the cardinals, they get their biretta, their red hat, if you will, was on a Saturday morning. And then on Sunday, they would get their rings, the names of the titular diaconate churches would be announced. That is now all going to be in one ceremony. That'll be on Saturday, February 18th. And then Sunday, the Pope, going along with tradition, he will say Mass with the new cardinals. And one of the reasons they're trying to stress, I don't think anybody thought that a consistory was a sacrament, but maybe a lot of people think that by a man becoming a cardinal, it's similar to ordination. They wanted to get away from that idea. This is simply a meeting, as the announcement from the Vatican said, a meeting with the Holy Father. And to be really clear for our listeners, there are only really three ordained orders, and that is deacon and priest and bishop. So cardinal is an honorific title. It is not an ordained title. So the Pope, during that special weekend, will be bestowing this honor on them in the form of their biretta, their titular or diaconate church, and their ring.
So and a prayerful event then.
A prayerful event, and the liturgy has been somewhat modified too. So you have the proclamation of the sacred scripture will take a shorter form. There's a single reading of Mark's gospel, and the collect and concluding prayers will be those originally approved by Pope Paul in 1969. And actually, a lot of these modifications, a lot of the reforms that were instituted by Pope Paul VI in 1969, following, of course, the Vatican Council too. So kind of streamlining the events of that weekend. I'm sure they're still going to have the usually overcrowded afternoon courtesy visits, and that's on the afternoon of the Saturday the cardinals are named. So a very exciting event, cardinals from many nations, none from Africa this time, but many other nations, cardinals in the Curia, archdiocesan cardinals, and so forth. It was an exciting Friday, and it will be an exciting weekend in February with the new cardinals.
So then Sunday, baptisms, a joyful event in the Sistine
Chapel.
Very touching moment.
Well, the Sistine Chapel is such a splendid, beautiful, historical chapel. And the fact that it is a chapel, we don't tend to think of that so often. We just say Sistine Chapel as if it's part of art, which it is. It's something you do see when you visit the Vatican Museums. But it's a chapel, too. And to use it as a church, to have a sacrament, you have a Mass in the first place. And then you have baptisms. And 16 children this year. So the Pope's words at the baptism were, well, aren't they always lovely? But, I mean, this year he noted that the decision for parents to baptize a child is their first educational choice as a witness of faith. And he said he recognizes full well that education is a daunting task, and it is a wonderful mission, however, if accomplished in partnership with God, who is the first and true educator of every man. So very beautiful words, a beautiful and moving ceremony. And I think probably the only downside is that given the relatively small size of the chapel compared to St. Peter's Basilica, obviously, you have parents, you have grandparents, you have godparents and other relatives, all of on both sides, the husband and wife sides, that want to be there. And the chapel can just take so many people. But there is something also doubly beautiful about the intimacy as compared to a much larger ceremonies.
That was Sunday. Monday, a very different yearly event, the State of the World address to diplomats.
Exactly. The Pope met with the diplomats accredited to the Holy See in the Sala Regia, the royal room, a very, very beautiful room, as a matter of fact, and to give his annual address on the light and darkness of the world, if you will, the shadows and lights of the world. And it's very interesting because the Holy See always puts out a fact sheet on this day, and noting that, for example, it does maintain full diplomatic relations with 179 states. To that, you add the European Union, the Sovereign Military Order of Malta. And then there's relations of a special nature, not necessarily on an ambassador level, with the Palestine Liberation Organization. And then, of course, we have observer state status all at the United Nations and all of its various offices in New York and elsewhere. Now, the Pope concentrated on several areas in his talk, as he always does. It really is a global overview, but in some instances, he will name a country in the context of something specific, like when he talked about the profound disquiet and the various crises, economic, political, and social, saying that the world is marked by the grave and disturbing developments of the global economic and financial crisis. And he said, you know, this has not only affected families in the economically advanced countries where this all originated, but also families in developing countries are very much affected by this global crisis. So he did talk about that and how it relates to people in their lives and the difficulties. He talked about, kind of born from this, the uncertainty felt particularly by the young. And then he linked that aspect of the young to their disquiet, which has given rise, as we saw earlier, a year ago almost as we speak, it has given rise to agitation that has affected various parts of the world. And he mentioned, of course, first and foremost is North Africa and the Middle East. And obviously he called for an end to hostilities and violence in areas such as Syria, the Holy Land, and Iraq. And then a good part of his talk was dedicated to, he called for religious freedom, to respect religious freedom. And he said, you know, sadly, we're not speaking of an isolated case. And he said, in many countries, Christians are deprived of fundamental rights and sidelined from public life. And in other countries, they endure violent attacks against their churches and their homes. And of course, it seems like we're always getting daily news from Nigeria, for example, at this moment. Anyway, this is always a talk. It's posted, obviously, in several languages on the internet and the Vatican website. If people really want to know, you know, what the Vatican thinks and feels, the Holy Father, about many things, this is the type of talk of his that they really should read and can read online.
Joan, then Wednesday, a colorful audience, perhaps. Can we describe it that way?
Yeah, absolutely. It was
his weekly general audience.
The weekly general audience, there's always a theme. He's been talking about prayer and Jesus, and this week he did focus on the Eucharist. But those in attendance, the faithful and pilgrims in attendance, kind of got an extra treat because there were, I think it was well over 100 members of a circus troupe who performed for the Holy Father, mainly acrobatics and so forth. And very, very colorful right there in the people in the front rows. I mean, they literally had a front row seat. They could have touched the acrobat. So that was very colorful. And then what I loved, and I did a little story on my blog calling it Pope Benedict and a Cuban Crocodile. And Rome's zoo, which is known as the Bioparco, is celebrating its centenary. And they had asked to celebrate it, obviously, with the Holy Father. And, of course, he's a very eco-friendly pontiff, I think, as our listeners know. So there were lots of guests. We mentioned the circus. We mentioned the 7,000 or so faithful. But there was also a rare live specimen of the Cuban crocodile that officials brought up to the Pope. Now, you could see a picture of one of the two zoo officials holding it. It looked like it was like 20 inches long. So whether it was a baby crocodile or this was as big as it was ever going to get. And it's a species that, by the way, the Rome Zoo does care for. They give particular attention to endangered species. And this crocodile, because its numbers have fallen like by 80% in recent years, and it lives in only a very small part of the island of Cuba, and it's in Rome because apparently it was ill And, you know, if you have an endangered species, you want to do all you can to preserve.
As a part of the Rome Zoo, it has sort of mini sort of hospital.
Yes, exactly. Very, very special treatment. So the Pope looked bemused and entertained by the fact that this man was showing him. The picture I saw looked like he was just about to pet it. Who knows? But
the curious thing is that this little crocodile is going to be back in Cuba.
Yeah.
For the Pope's visit there.
Exactly. A welcoming committee of one, if you will. See, just about the same time, yes, that the Pope in late March will be going to Cuba and Mexico. Our mini friend here will be taken back to his native land and habitat, hopefully a healthy specimen.
So there's one last story, Joan.
And it's not so much Rome news this time, the Pope, the Vatican, the Holy See, as it is actually representatives of the Bishops' Conference in England and Wales, and also bishops from the United States are in the Holy Land as we speak. And since 1998, they've organized what's called the Annual Meeting of the Coordination of Episcopal Conferences in support of the Church in the Holy Land. This is at the invitation of the Assembly of Catholic Ordinaries of the Holy Land. And I did not know this until this week. This is mandated. This visit is mandated by the Holy See. So this group is called the Holy Land Coordination, meets every January there, focuses on prayer, pilgrimage, and persuasion, as they call it, to show solidarity with the Christian communities. Exactly. And, I mean, to listen to some of the bishops in the place, to hear them talk about the situation of Christians, it makes you almost really want to weep. The idea that someday there may be no Christians in the land of Christ is very, very sad.
Thanks very much, Joan. See you next week, then.
Indeed.
Well, you were listening there, as always, at this time of week, to Joan Lewis, our Vatican expert and EWTN's bureau chief here in Rome.